Welcome back, listeners. This is season two of the show. To kick things off this season, my guest is Kim Whaley. Kim is a tenured law professor, author, lawyer, and news analyst. Her new book is How to Think Like a Lawyer and Why. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Season two begins. Kim Whaley, thank you so much for doing this in the middle of a busy time during your book promotion. I appreciate you. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Chris. I'm so delighted to be on your show.
Absolutely. I've been wanting to talk to you since I read How to Read the Constitution and Why. That was a little while ago. Now I'm still reeling from that one because it's such a powerful read. You've obviously got two books that have come out since then, including the newest one, How to Think Like a Lawyer and Why. For the people listening out there that might not be familiar with your work or might not have seen you on TV making the rounds and all the stuff you do, can you please tell us a little bit about your education, your professional background?
Well, my education is actually English major. So I started out interested in literature and writing and then went to law school and practiced for a long time, both in and out of the government. So my government rounds included a federal clerkship with a judge. It included working as an assistant U.S. attorney. It included working in the Whitewater investigation with famously into Bill Clinton's presidency with Ken Starr. And right. Then I went into teaching law many years ago. And I also practice, but been writing scholarly articles as a tenured law professor. And then when Donald Trump kind of came on the political scene, a lot of the hypotheticals that I would put in law school exams of the this would never happen type variety that you have to come up with ideas to test concepts were playing out in real time. That the Constitution has been pressured and pushed and pulled and tugged in so many ways that no one really who thinks about this stuff is anticipated. And also a lot of, people who report on this stuff don't get it right. So I started writing op-eds and doing radio hits that then moved into TV and then moved into the three books that you mentioned. And my new passion just unexpectedly has been civic education on a public stage, where trying to convey some tools through these books for people to start drawing their own conclusions, meandering through this morass of information, making sense of it for themselves, kind of frameworks, step-by-step instructions so that people can be empowered to think for themselves, which sounds cliche, but it's really underrated these days.
Yeah, well, and you mentioned you're a tenured law professor. You've been teaching for, a long time now. Teaching is a whole other thing. It requires a lot of dedication, obviously, but I feel like teachers teach because, it's a calling. It's beyond a profession. Can you talk about why you decided to sort of walk down that path, and what do you get out of that personally?
It has been a while. It's hard for me to remember, and I must be frank, part of it was because I'm actually a mom. I have four daughters, and teaching does honestly provide a tremendous amount of flexibility, but it's come to be, that was part of it, frankly, but also it's about the independent thinking, the independence, the ability to use my mind and to go in directions to solve thorny problems that I personally really care about, both on an individual and in a public level. So that's the scholarship side. On the teaching side, knowledge is power, but skills are power. And I think we're in an environment where, we've all had the experience where being on a team feels empowering. I have daughters and their cliques in starting in around third grade, and people glom into their group because that feels safe, that feels empowering. And frankly, I think we do it as adults as well. One version of that are political parties, major political parties in America. And with misinformation and the digital age, it's really gotten out of hand. So what I like to do in the classroom, and I decided to translate into everyday living rooms with these books, is to give people some of those skills to think for themselves.
Yeah, and let's ask you about the book, How to Think Like a Lawyer and Why. My co-host for Vanished, which we talked about offline, is a criminal defense attorney out of Austin. So I've been lucky enough to get a little bit of a peek into this window of thinking over the years as we've done the show. Tell me about the book. How does the idea come to you? Why is this the next logical step in your series?
The next logical step has to do with, I mean, you read Constitution. I appreciate that. It's
yeah.
aimed at breaking down the Constitution in common sense language. And I'll just tell you, Chris, the key to all three of the books is the and why. I explain why you need to know this stuff and why the Constitution works the way it does. Why do we have three branches of government, right? If you understand the why, you can remember the what. Well, step one was a third of Americans can't name the three branches. We just need to explain it better. And descriptions only go so far. People need to be able to ride the Constitution bike, as I say. People don't learn how to ride bikes by being told. They have to get on it and ride it. Number two was, okay, at the end of the day, our entire Constitution hinges on accountability. How do we have accountability? At the ballot box. So number two, what you need to know about voting and why was really a self-education around the engine behind the Constitution. And then when we got through that and we had, the 2020 election in the midst of a pandemic and all these attempts to challenge people's access to the ballot, to make it harder to vote. And of course, that culminated in the big lie in the January insurrection.
Right.
I realized, listen, this is deeper than law. This is deeper than education. We are so entrenched in my way or the highway. I'm right, you're wrong, black and white thinking, that maybe we need to reframe things. And I'll tell you, the big difference between how lawyers think, this surprises people, and non-lawyers is that lawyers look for questions. They don't actually look for answers. They don't start with a conclusion and support the conclusion. They look for gray areas, squishy stuff, questions, ambiguous places. And then they exhaust the facts. They exhaust the arguments for both sides. And it frankly dawned on me, Chris, that if people could be trained to do that even a little bit, maybe we can just nudge things out of our stuck place, even in small places of our communities.
Yeah, that's a powerful point. I want to ask you about some of the standout stories in the world right now. I mean, there's no shortage, obviously. I of course, would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the situation that's unfolded in the Ukraine and continues to unfold there minute by minute, it seems like. What are your thoughts on those events? Where do you see this ultimately leading us?
My thoughts on the events, as you know, I've been talking a lot publicly about democracy. Why? Because, that's the Constitution. And keep in mind, you know, the new Supreme Court nominee, Judge Brown Jackson, she famously, I think now, wrote an opinion as a D.C. Circuit judge in connection with one of the Trump litigations where former White House counsel Don McGahn was saying, I don't have to provide any information because I worked for the president. She said, listen, you don't need to be a constitutional law professor to understand the foundational premise of America. No more kings. Why? Because kings have unlimited power and they can use it in an arbitrary way. So what are we seeing? We're seeing Vladimir Putin try to impose his unilateral will on a free democracy by going from the outside in, you know, attacking a free country. But Chris, what we're seeing, and I've understood this through my three books, is a corrosion or attack on our democracy from the inside out. Through misinformation, through canceling votes or attempting to cancel votes, and of course, making voting harder. Today, Texans go to the ballot box with a draconian set of laws that make no sense other than to make it hard for people to vote. So that's number one. I think it's a wake-up call for Americans. Ukrainians are having to fight with learning how to use military-grade weapons, moms, teachers, doctors, lawyers, postal service workers, whatever, regular people are now arming themselves without any military training. How do we do it? We just have to vote. Now, it's hard, for sure, but I hope people can see our path so far is a lot easier than those Ukrainian heroes over there. The last thing that I remember about this, and this also goes to my books, is the first impeachment of Donald Trump. You know, I think we forget this. Why was he impeached? Because he told now President Zelensky, who's famous for his courage, Ukrainian President Zelensky, I'm not going to give you the money Congress said you get to arm yourself against Russian aggression unless you gin up a bogus investigation against my political rival. That was why he was impeached. And every Republican in the United States Senate, except for Mitt Romney, voted to acquit him. So my message is take that information to the polls when you're voting on members of Congress in November. We are seeing the suffering and the courage and the deaths already and the injuries of these Ukrainians who our members of Congress had said, you get money to protect yourself against Putin. Donald Trump said, no, I'm going to use this for my own benefit. and Republicans in the United States Congress right now said, we're siding with Trump and not Zelensky. I think that's absolutely stunning, stunning, stunning. And it's not about
Yeah.
politics. It's about integrity and the value system that makes us Americans.
Does any of this surprise you anymore? I feel like you mentioned it early in the conversation. Just it's been a hell of a year. It's been just really crazy. Well, hell of a several years. But does any of this stuff surprise you? I feel like every time I see something new, I just think like, well, I mean, it's shocking and it's saddening, but it's not, unfortunately, it's not surprising anymore. I mean, this is a very interesting country we live in, and it's getting crazy out there. Does any of it ever surprise you? Are you ever taken aback on anything you see or read?
Well, I had been waiting for years for, frankly, the what I call the current Republican Party. We really need to rename it. It's not the traditional party of Lincoln, right? The
Yeah.
original Republican Party was anti-slavery. It was the Democrats that wanted to adhere to that regime. I really thought there would be a red line that wouldn't be crossed. There are a few that won't. Mitt Romney might be one, even Mike Pence, who stood up for democracy, Liz Cheney. But after the insurrection, nothing surprises in me anymore because I know we are a hair's breadth away from the end of American democracy. What does dishearten me, Chris, is that Americans are so complacent and we're in this Facebook culture where we're supposed to have happy talk and it's somebody else's problem. Well, it's somebody else's problem until, as we're seeing in Ukraine, the stormtroopers are at the back door and you've got to grab
Yeah.
your 3-year-old's hand and drag them to safety somehow. And if Americans think that somehow it's our birthright to not be in those position, in the position of those people in Ukraine, you're fooling yourself. So what surprises me is the fact that people are so complacent and in denial about how
Yeah.
serious this is. But honestly, I think I need to continue to be surprised or I'd throw in the towel.
it's very true. Obviously, you just touched on January 6th. I want to ask you about that. We were gearing up to cover our series for Vanished on John Wilkes Booth and the assassination of Lincoln, and the fallout from all of that. There had been discussion on our show about the parallels between 1865 and modern times, and of course between the presidencies of, Andrew Johnson, Donald Trump. What will the continuing fallout be for the events of that day, January 6th, and what are your thoughts on what happened as we look back, really in a historical sense now?
The critical thing to understand about January 6th and elections in America is this. We were founded on a system where only white males who had land could originally vote. And there's no affirmative right to vote in the Constitution. So it's all been about who gets to vote, who gets to vote. Eventually, black males could vote, 15th Amendment. Women could vote 70 years later, 19th Amendment. Putting that tent bigger and bigger, 1965, Voting Rights Act, states tried to outmaneuver these protections, blah, blah, blah. The critical thing to think about of January 2021 is that the debate has now shifted from who can vote to whose votes get to be counted. We are now debating whether to cancel, throw out, trash, ignore, eradicate, obliterate anybody's vote. We can go back to the founding of the Constitution and say, okay, even if we agree only white males with money should be able to vote, in this moment, their votes will be canceled if they don't adhere to the big lie and what is really now an authoritarian, totalitarian platform on the right. It's a very new frontier for American democracy that is very rarely articulated properly.
And you talked about Facebook earlier and you talked about all that. I feel like there's something to be said about how we consume information. In modern times, we have instant news, as you know, these days. It feels like it's a full-time job trying to discern fake news from real news. Right now, we're watching a war unfold on Twitter and TikTok with these short videos, and it's heartbreaking, and there's so much stuff going on. Does all this hurt us as a society, do you think, or is there enough silver lining there to outweigh what seems to be this onslaught of bitterness and negativity and anger about everything? I mean, it's kind of a poetic thing to ask, but does love ultimately win here?
I'm not a philosopher and I'm not particularly religious, but now that you've asked me, I'll confess on air I am a spiritual person and I do believe in sort of the positive energies of the universe and I hope and believe that we can move through this, but again, democracies have died in our lifetime. So, if it fails for Americans, maybe that's a lesson that we have to learn for the long-term trajectory of humanity and it'll circle back in a few decades. I don't know. I'm hopeful, but I don't know what the magic formula is anymore. I don't know what's going to shift it. I think the forces of darkness are stronger in this moment, and what it will take, as you mentioned, the word love, is people finding their common humanity, people finding their strength and their courage the way the Ukrainians are doing, and understanding that there's a higher calling than politics. There's a higher calling than being on a team, and that is protecting freedoms for your kids. And just so people understand, this goes back to my first Constitution book. When I talk about freedoms, I'm talking about the Bill of Rights. I'm talking about the ability to speak without being penalized or jailed, the ability to worship where you want to worship, the ability to have a fair hearing before your liberty or your life is taken away in the death chamber. You know, this is stuff we just think is part of being human. The answer is no. And if you think that, oh, I'm a Republican, so that's only not going to affect me, wrong. Once you throw away the system, it'll eventually come for you as well. So I have to stay positive, you know, otherwise, as I said, I don't even know what that other side of things are. I'm a fighter and I'll keep fighting, but I don't have all the answers. I wish I did.
I want to ask you about, you mentioned Judge Brown Jackson and Joe Biden's, President Biden's pick for her to sit on the Supreme Court. This is another very important story. It's a very historic pick, obviously, for obvious reasons, but for the general public who maybe doesn't know, what does this mean? What does this do? What is this? How does this push the envelope or not push the envelope, sorry, push us forward, I should say.
Well, it's not going to push us forward in terms of the outcome of cases because there's a solid, I don't even think conservative, it's really a radical majority on the right on the U.S. Supreme Court. And I don't use that word lightly. What really changed my opinion was what happened in Texas with the SB8 abortion law. The way the Constitution works is it's the boss of the bosses. It's the highest law of the land. And until the interpretation of the Constitution changes, that's the boss. That's the stop sign. That's the red light. It said 24 weeks before states can regulate abortion. Texas did it at 6 weeks. The Supreme Court refused. In refusing to enjoin that law, the majority on the Supreme Court refused to uphold the Constitution itself. That's scary stuff. So that's the downside. Putting this judge on the bench, however, of course, she's the first African-American woman. She's only the third person of color in the history of the Supreme Court, 218 people. All of the rest were white males, with the exception of a number of additional, I think, total of five women. But what we're going to see now, Chris, is a solid female minority on the court. We have 6-3 opinions. It's going to be three women, two of color. So that's a different optical position for the majority than we had before with Justice Breyer in the minority, where we've got, okay, not only do we have it split along ideological lines potentially, although I think the liberals are now really just moderates, rule of law people, but we're going to see, you know, three women, two of color. The representation of America is going to be clearly in the minority. So I think that's really important. Yeah. Also, she's got exceptional experience both as trial judge, appellate judge. She's had a criminal defense lawyer. All that stuff is really good for the quality of her decision making. I want to go back, though. You mentioned a really important point when it comes to information. And you said, oh, my gosh, we have such onslaught of bad information. And in my book, I have a 5-part test or a 5-step process for making decisions the way lawyers do. The first one is to break the issue down. Number two is to identify your values that bear on that. Believe it or not, there are values embedded in our laws. And number three is to collect loss of knowledge. Four is I identify the arguments both sides. And T is tolerate that you might not win everything. But on the collecting of information, I think we need to teach our kids, K through 12, how to sort through bad information to find the good information. When I was a kid, it was about how to find it, right? You had to hunt and peck in the card catalog. It wasn't around there. It was hard. We need to develop skills. It should be in the curriculum from day one, reading, writing, sorting through good and bad information. I have a few tips in the book. Just a takeaway is to identify the source, make sure that they operate based on integrity and facts. And number two, read original sources. And I have tips in the book on how to sort through that information to start to draw your own conclusions. We're out of the time where you can listen to someone like Kim Whaley to tell you what to think about the law. We need to start empowering ourselves to do more critical thinking. And that's really the agenda of my whole book series. And I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, as we get out of here tonight, Kim, tell us where we can get the book, where we can follow you online, drop your website, your Twitter, all that jazz, please.
Sure. Thanks. So the book is everywhere. Amazon, Barnes and Noble, your local bookstore. It's with HarperCollins. You can get it on HarperCollins. You can also find it on my website, www.kimwhaley.com. And that's spelled W-E-H-L-E, Whaley, rhymes with daily. That's also my Twitter and Instagram handle, @KimWhaley. And I also have a series on Instagram and on YouTube called Simple Politics, where I invite experts and I break down issues step by step. You can be know nothing about Ukraine and Russia, and we'll start from soup to nuts and break that down. We'll be doing that soon. We've done it on China. We've done it on, all kinds of legal issues, various geopolitical problems. So check that out. I think there's some interesting stuff on there.
Awesome. Links in the show notes to everything she just mentioned and the topics we discuss here tonight. The book is How to Think Like a Lawyer and Why, Kim. When I started this show a couple years ago, I knew I wanted to ask you to come on. I am honored. Thank you so much for doing this.
Great conversation. Thanks, Chris, for having me.
Another conversation behind us. Thanks for hanging out with me and my friends. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please visit us on social media as we post each new conversation as they air. News, show information, and more. Go to facebook.com/meandmyfriendspod. On Twitter, you can search the handle meandmyfriendspod. And on Instagram, search the handle meandmyfriendspod. If you enjoyed the conversation tonight, please do me a favor and head to Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher and rate us and leave us a review. It really does help get the word out. Me and My Friends is produced by Vanessa Williamson and edited by me, Chris Williamson. The show's music is created and performed by producer Riddiman. The opinions on Me and My Friends are those of the individual guests and may not reflect those of Chris Eben Films Incorporated. Chris Eben Films Incorporated is not affiliated with the films or clips referred to herein. Any audio clips used in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purposes of education and entertainment, and no infringement is ever intended. Me and My Friends is an exclusive trademark of Chris Eben Films Incorporated and may not be used without the express written consent of Chris Eben Films Incorporated. All rights reserved. Me and My Friends is a Chris Eben Films production, copyright 2022. All rights reserved.